Hello, I'm Dr. Roger Steiner, director of the Gavin Herbert Eye Institute and professor and chair of ophthalmology at the University of California, Irvine. Welcome to Medscape Ophthalmology Insights, coming from the American Academy of Ophthalmology meeting in Chicago. Joining me today are Dr. Burkhardt Dick and Dr. Bill Trattler. Dr. Dick is professor and chair at the Center for Vision Science, Ruhr University Eye Hospital in Bochum, Germany. And Dr. Trattler is director of cornea at the Center of Excellence in Eye Care in Miami, Florida. We'll be discussing the latest developments in femtosecond lasers for refractive cataract surgery. And we'd like to begin, I think, by exploring just the general concepts of how this is playing out in your practice. Now, Dr. Dick, you've done about 1,000 cases at this point, which is one of the largest experiences in the world. Bill and I, being citizens of the United States, are disadvantaged that way, so we're a little further behind you, but each of us has our own perspectives, both from international as well as local use. But maybe we could start with you, and just how, since you've done so many cases, how is this fitting into your previous practice pattern? How have you altered things, and what is special about this to have done so many cases?
Well, we started in mid of December very conservatively because I wasn't really sure if there are surprises or something like that. And from then on, interestingly, the interest started to be increasing tremendously. Germans trust in technology, of course. This may be one reason. The other reason was that the results were very, very good. And we have a preoperative counselor who explains the different options, premium IOLs, and as well as the laser. And interestingly, my business plan was, which was for 2 years and 600 eyes within these 2 years, was already done after 6 months. So currently, we have performed 1,200 cases already on a commercial base. And the nice thing is that it perfectly fits into the practice. The additional time is between 1 and 2 minutes only. So the procedure is faster because the aspiration is faster. The capsulotomy is already done. But you have a little bit more time, which is in with the catalyst. It's about 2.5 minutes for the entire procedure.
Now, I understand that you've got a setup that is, I think, a little different than at least most people envision, which is that you actually have the laser in your cataract surgery operating room, and you do the procedure and just swivel the bed over and do the, is that right? And then do the rest of the surgery.
Yep. Exactly. But this is the biggest advantage and the good thing that I decided to place it in the OR because it allows us to do corneal incisions also. And in the Germany, in the Europe, most areas, you can only place it into the OR because you're opening the eye. And you can, with the liquid optic interface, for example, you can swivel the patient under the laser and back and forth. That means you can even dilate the pupil first, then go under the laser, and other things. Hmm. And this is a big advantage. I would strongly suggest that the patient is not moved to another place, because if the patient is moved to another OR or something like that, you are losing time. And currently, there is a certain percentage of patients where the pupil goes down. It's rare, but it may come down. And that's something you don't want in a premium IOL for a toric, for a lens, for example, that the pupil comes down. This is not the case if the patient is just directly operated then intraocular at the same place.
Hmm. Bill, what's your workflow going to be?
We're going to copy exactly what you're doing, Dr. Dick. I think it makes so much sense. We're going to be putting the femtosecond laser in our operating room, and exactly the same thing. We're going to do the laser and then swivel them over and do the cataract surgery immediately. I think it makes a lot of sense. We're in a big, we have a 5-room ASC in Miami, Florida. We actually don't have a separate room to put a femtosecond laser, so it makes the most sense for it to do it in the same operating room.
Mm-hmm. And we're in the process of completing construction of a whole new eye institute. So, of course, I had great foresight and constructed a room next to the two ORs, especially for the laser. And now you're making me think I wasted some space. So we'll have to see. I think we have to rethink all of that, because we've been joking that in a university setting, the turnover is so slow that doing it in another room won't slow us down a bit. But time will tell. So now
slow down your procedure. I mean, I'm jumping in between ORs. Yeah. So that means about 3,500 cataracts and about 1,000 vitrectomies. And having said this, that means you have to jump. Jump to one next place and next place. And it doesn't turn you down at all. And this has been shown to hundreds of visitors already.
Yeah. Has your staff been able to keep track, though, of which patients you want in the laser room and which cases you're going to do without the laser and not get confused and have the person in the wrong place?
Well, this is very easy. We have an OR schedule, of course, where there is who's going to operate at femto, but you can do anybody with femto laser treatment. And within these 1,200 cases, there were two where we weren't able to treat, and those were with severe ankylosis, who were not able to fit on the table.
Can I ask a question? Yeah. I'm just curious. With your high volume, do you envision somebody who have a femto in both OR rooms?
That's something next step. I'm thinking about buying a second laser, right?
It makes sense. I mean, because as the volume keeps going up.
Yeah. Definitely. The second eye procedures all will choose for femto.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you did mention about patients perceiving, at least, better results. Yep. Can you expand on that? Because that's always been an issue is, you know, there's always the joke that lasers are solutions looking for problems. So how is this making things better?
Well, the point is that especially for the normal eyes, you know, everybody in the cataract patients do not exactly how high or how great they can come out. So it's hard for them to differentiate. If the patient is, last week I was operating on a Lufthansa air pilot who was 0.8 but still had cataract already that had to be operated, also because of legal issues. And, of course, he raised the bar very high and then I was happy to have the femtosecond laser then. And he turned out pretty well. The great advantage, of course, is for the dense cataracts, where you have a pre-chop already and the lens is already fragmented, and cornea guttata, for example, eyes, and the difficult cases definitely profit from this procedure. In the prospective randomized comparative trial, we have seen that in the femto-operated eye, inter-individual comparison, the femto eye was by one line better than the standard eye within the first 1 week, and then this dissipated.
Why would vision be better in the first week?
Because there are less corneal folds, less corneal edema. The trauma is zero because, I mean, in the last 100 cases I did, after changing instrumentation, settings, software, and so forth, 87 out of my 100 patients did not need phaco at all. So we switch out phaco and I just aspirate it. And this makes a big difference. If you do not apply phaco and less manipulations in the eye, definitely means that there is less inflammation also. We had a photo count, the laser flare meter, was significantly lower in the femto group compared to the standard group.
And you know, I think your series, from what I understand, as well as others that are starting to come out, are showing a less total ultrasound time.
Right, tremendous.
So that should be an advantage as well. Have you had a chance to look at endothelial cell counts?
It's too early. We currently have the 3 months data out, which is this study is powered for best corrected visual acuity. We have a second trial, prospective randomized, but we have not the 3 months data yet.
Yeah.
Too early to conclude on that point. But I can tell you this. I recently had a patient with a cornea guttata. Left eye was already operated outside. Corneal decompensation, graft on it, irregular astigmatism, visual acuity 0.3p, and the other eye, she feared that she would undergo the same history, so to say. But I operated on her with the femto treatment, and she had I didn't need phaco at all, and the cornea was crystal clear. Mm. Yeah, and the referring doctor said to me, "Don't do operate femto treatment on my patients." But I, from my heart, I wasn't able to do it, so I decided to do a femto case, and she turned out extremely well. And this doctor sends me now his patients, which are already primed for femto.
So you didn't lose him as a referral.
No.
not at all.
It's just the opposite.
Exactly. That's you turned that around.
Right. I did have a question also. You know, with femto being the way it is, are you able to use a less expensive viscoelastic? I mean, you know, before with doing regular phaco, there's a lot of energy and you want to have viscoelastic that protected the endothelium. But now it seems to be less of an issue. So I was wondering if you change your viscoelastic or thought about changing it.
I think we will get rid of the OVD. Yeah, with the femto procedure, I'd see no need for OVD any longer. That's something we also are doing, running a prospective trial currently, comparing standard versus femto. One eye with OVD, with the phaco standard case, and the femto without, because for the capsulotomy, you don't need OVD. For irrigation aspiration only, you definitely do not need OVD. And that means only for lens implantation. But lens implantation can be done if you have a one-handed preloaded IOL. With the irrigation through the side port, you don't need OVD also.
Yeah.
And that means no IOP increase and other issues.
That does make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Bill, I mean, how do you see this ultimately impacting, you know, not where we are today, but is this going to take us to places where we aren't?
Absolutely. I think a variety of reasons. First of all, the outcomes. You're absolutely right. When I look at my patients post-operative day one, you know, I have some patients that are seeing 20, 20, 20, 25, and they're so happy. Then you have some patients that were a little more difficult to phaco, and they have corneal edema, and they're seeing 20, 50, 20, 60, and they're a little bit less excited about post-op day one. I have to reassure them a lot that they will get better. And so if I could get consistently 20, 20, 20, 25 on post-op day one with femtocatarcta, I think it'll make a big impact for my patients. They have such high expectations going in, and the quicker I can get them to see, the better. So I do think that the long term, we're going to see this totally taking over cataract surgery. I don't think there's any question. I mean, cost-wise, you know, we're right now as a refractive surgeon, we have an intralace, you know, we have a femtosecond laser for making a flap, and a excimer laser, and the total number of procedures in the United States is about 800,000 a year. And now we're talking about cataract surgery where there's 3.4 million a year just in the U.S. alone. Mm-hmm. So numbers-wise. And even though there's a cost for the femto, I think the volume is going to just make it so that it's not very expensive per case. So I think cost will be less of an issue going forward.
What about, is it going to have an impact on intraocular lenses and where we go with them?
Yes, definitely. It will totally change anything we have thought about. New things will come up, I'm sure. That means maybe clipping or moving the lens into the anterior capsule, the capsulotomy, or the posterior capsulotomy. What I recognized is that we can do a posterior capsulotomy also with the laser reliably, with keeping the vitreous intact. And so it will definitely have a big impact on the localization. With adequate biomorphing, like detection, biomorphological detection, we will be able to exactly place it on the line of sight, which will definitely have also on the functionality of premium IOLs, like toric multifocal IOLs, that they are placed properly better than we were able to before.
I find it hard to believe that this won't, in the end, turn into one of those disruptive technologies that... It's very hard to imagine, you know, sitting here today any more than anyone really foresaw that the first desktop computers would take us to where we are today, or cell phones when they were bag phones, and now we are all going around with smartphones that are mini computers. Yeah. So it's hard to believe this isn't going to ultimately take us to the land that we want to get to, which is the land of truly accommodating intraocular lenses and facilitate that.
But I'm convinced about that. Yeah. Definitely, yes.
You know, I think it makes sense. You know, some of the imaging technologies for the various companies, you can see the entire bag, and it makes sense that right now one of the biggest challenges we have to do is figure out the effective lens position of an IOL. I mean, obviously your idea of clipping the IOL to the bag makes a lot of sense, but even with our current technology, if we could guess where the lens would sit because we could image the bag well, maybe we can do a better job of picking the right IOLs for each patient just during the imaging process of the femtosecond procedure.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Good.
One last thing before we wrap up, which is astigmatism. One of the things a laser can do that we can't do any other way is intrastromal astigmatic keratotomy. And I'm hearing a number of surgeons feeling the same way, which is that the very low-power toric lenses aren't delivering the same kind of reliable correction that we're getting from the higher ones, and that maybe this is going to be a particular niche to do intrastromal AKs, or the other version, I think Eric Donenthal was the first one to talk about it, but doing them, even if they penetrate, not necessarily opening them completely and being able to titrate it post-op by breaking down the little tissue bridges at the slit lamp post-op. Any thoughts on that or experience with that?
Sure. I'll go. I've been using the AMO IFS laser, the intralace, and doing the intrastromal AKs. And it's actually worked very nicely. You know, I've been treating patients between one and two doctors of astigmatism, and the pre- and post-op topographies are very nice. And so these are patients that are scheduled for cataract surgery. I decided to do the treatments, the AKs, prior to cataract surgery to first reduce the astigmatism so I can understand how it worked. And my initial results have been very positive. So I'm excited to do more.
Yeah. So same. I would say, the intrastroma is not capable to treat to that high extent, of course.
But
in my hands, it's about 0.75, something around that, surgically induced change, so to say. But with these high precision, high resolution OCT, you are able to really have a perfect cut in all regards. And we fortunately had the chance in a human eye to check if this is really true, how exactly we are doing this. And this human eye was suffering from a malignant tumor. The patient wanted the eye out, so we had the chance to laser first on a vivid human eye and then do histopathology on it. And we were really deeply impressed. It was exactly the 200 microns left from the endothelium, 30 degree exactly, cut. And then it cut exactly through the Bowman as it was expected and we wanted it to, and the epithelium was kept intact. So this is a really impressive technology, and I'm sure this will definitely improve our outcomes.
Excellent. I'd like to thank Dr. William Trattler and Dr. Burkhard Dick for taking time out from their very busy Academy of Ophthalmology meeting to come and share your insights and thoughts and experience. And I'd like to thank the audience for joining us. I'm Dr. Roger Steinert for Medscape Ophthalmology.